So Lani is a sophrologist, and Lani, we always ask you to quickly explain what sophrology means for people who are going, oh, what's that word mean?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, when we talk about sophrology, we do talk about what it is, but also why. A lot of times we don't really pay attention unless we understand why we even need it. So sophrology is actually happiness training, because we teach people how to reach a state of positive potential. And in that space, you can expand and accomplish things that are more peaceful and balanced for your life. So it's the study of sophrology. The word actually defined means the study of conscious harmony of brain-body connection. So your whole person structure, mind, body, spirit, breath, and consciousness, and how those all need to be harmonized.
Okay. That's nice and easy.
Yeah.
And today you just said to me you want to talk about emotional regulation, and why has that come up as a topic?
Well, last week I've been teaching a course to a group of women who suffered some childhood trauma. And so they were talking to me about, they were going to the Hikoi, or some of them were going to the Hikoi the next morning in Hamilton. And so I was helping them understand that they had to come at it from a place of love and kindness. And that when you can understand the reason for your anger, we've always got an egoic, like the reason for our anger being it comes from our ego or our pride. And so understanding the reason for the anger or the frustration or the worry or the sadness or whatever emotion that we're feeling will help us to regulate emotion in the body so that we don't harm ourselves with high blood pressure or high heart rate or, you know, intense emotion in the belly, which can cause offset of the microbiome and things like that. So
were they worried? Were they worried that might happen to them?
The whole topic is
stressing everyone out at the moment.
Yeah, they didn't even understand when I explained that to them. They were like, "Oh, yeah, we can see now how our intense emotion is actually injuring our own person." So in the process of fighting for that thing you so much believe in, you actually hurt yourself, because you hurt your body systems, but you don't realize that you're hurting yourself by voicing your anger and frustration from an angry place.
So are we better off avoiding the topic?
No, not at all. But in order to have a conversation about the topic, it's about observing yourself, coming at it from where you are in regards to what is my reason? Why is this making me feel this way? What is my passion? What is driving my passion? And whatever is driving your passion should be coming from a compassionate place. So perhaps, like for this situation, the thing that might be driving someone's passion is the love for my people, or the love for my tribe, or the love for my children, you know, the whānau. It's so being in a space of love and recognizing I love my children and I want what's best for them, and therefore I have a passionate anger for this situation. I'm worried for their well-being. I feel sad that my ancestors aren't being acknowledged properly, whatever the case, you know, whatever. So it's about identifying the love that is impacting the emotion that you're feeling.
And is that enough to simmer us down, I guess?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, well, I mean, so when I say that, it's easy for me to make those words come out of my mouth, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's actually not an easy thing to do. And so that's why we talk about brain-body connection in sophrology, is because you literally have to train your brain. Anytime you're wanting to make a change in your lifestyle or your mindset or anything that you're doing, it takes continuous repetition, because you're trying to rewire or train your brain depending on your age. So younger than 25, we're training the brain. Over 25, we're actually rewiring.
Right.
And so in order to do that, it takes continuous practice. As with anything, we know that you can't just pick up a piano, you know, an instrument or a ball and just start playing at optimal level because you have a desire to do that thing, right?
Yeah.
So the same goes along with our emotions. I have a desire to be kind to other people. I have a desire to be happy. I have a desire to dwell in a space of positive emotion. But just because I desire that does not mean it's going to happen instantaneously. I have to be able to train my brain and my body to easily access that space.
Well, I think the good news about the Hikoi was that it was actually a really positive atmosphere. And the people I talked to who went, and you could tell, I think the intention of the organizers was that it would be that as well.
Mm-hmm. And so they're in that space of, I need to keep myself under control here. But what's happening when they're not at the Hikoi? Are they still in a space of peacefulness, or in their private conversations, or in their private space? What's their reaction to, like, you know, they see a piece of media come across their social media when they're scrolling, or they're watching the news or something. And how are they regulating emotions when they're in a private space and not public? Because everyone knows that in public, there's cameras and there's stuff going on and there's police nearby and watching, and everyone's on guard, you know? So yeah, it can look peaceful, but what's really going on inside of your heart and your head?
Right. And this is the point of sophrology, is that that's affecting our physical health. And we've got to learn how to maintain or regulate our emotions. I mean, that's what this is about, emotional regulation.
Yeah, all the time. So that you're authentically regulating. So in that public environment, you are authentically regulated. You are peaceful. I am peaceful about this environment and this situation. And, you know, so-and-so who says something doesn't really affect me in an angry way. Because my first go-to is, oh, I really love my family, and therefore I need to help this person understand that I don't agree with what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
So when we work with this in sophrology, the foundation of the work that we do, it's meditation, but we don't call it meditation. We call it dynamic relaxation exercise, because we're doing more than just quietly sitting in the lotus position, straining to think about nothing. Because that's what people think they're doing when we say meditation to people who have not meditated. They think, oh, I can't sit in that position and I can't quiet my mind. Well, everyone can quiet their mind. You just have to train yourself to do it. And we don't sit in the lotus position in sophrology. So
can you, if you want to?
You can, sure. You can do whatever works best for your body. The reason we use standing. Well, in a typical 20-minute meditation, we will sit, stand, move, breathe, sometimes walk, all of the, you know, variations, things that we do in our normal everyday environment, because we're trying to train the brain, right? So if I'm standing meditating in a standing position, my brain is active and alert and being trained to stand comfortably. So if I'm having to stand in a line or stand and, you know, wash something or whatever, I can stand in a position that is peaceful because I've trained my brain how to do that. Same goes for sitting. If you're in a place where you're feeling stressed by, say it's a public meeting or something, and the person that's speaking is saying something you don't appreciate, but you've trained your body to sit in a certain position and be calm. And so your brain tunes into that posture that you're in, and then you're able to regulate your emotions in a public environment or with whatever's going on around you.
So you can trigger yourself to be calm. We always talk about trigger. When we get triggered, we get angry. We always associate triggering with that. But what you seem to be saying is you can trigger yourself to be calm.
You can, yeah. You can trigger. So we call it anchoring in sophrology. we anchor ourselves to a certain posture, a certain thought, a certain physical sensation, or an image in the mind, a scent, a smell, a sound. We anchor to these things. So like if, when I say to you, let's see, when I say All Blacks, what do you think of?
Haka.
Okay. So you're anchored to the, and who's performing the haka?
They are. I have to admit, that was, for some reason, that had crossed my mind just before you said that. So that was already in my head.
Okay. Yeah. So you'll be anchored if you, you know, a fun exercise to do is to just like go about your day and identify the things that you're anchored to. So like when you first wake up in the morning, you're probably anchored to a specific routine that you do all the time.
Yeah.
You might smell something or hear something that you're anchored to. You're anchored to when you come and you sit in that chair in the studio, you're anchored to specific things that you look at, buttons that you're going to push to make things work. Like you're anchored to those. That's
very much in here. Yeah. Yeah.
So when we're anchored in dynamic relaxation exercise, we'll actually train a person to anchor to, you know, feel, you know, we'll do a happiness exercise and you'll think of a happy memory. And then you'll anchor to the physical sensation in the body, how happiness feels in your body. So that some other time when you're feeling sad or lonely or depressed or angry, you can go back to, oh, let me see that meditation. I was sitting here. I was thinking this. Oh, yeah. And there's that happiness, this physical sensation of happiness. And then you're feeling that. And then in this, because in a state of happiness, your mind, your body is relaxed, your mind is open, and you're able to make a clear decision for the next response. Because when you're angry, sad, depressed, worried, you're anchored to that one thing that you're thinking about, and your physical responses are going to be around that. So if you're depressed, you're going to like be in bed, pull the covers up over your head and not want to get out of bed or move. And so you're stuck and you're frozen in that space. In anger, anything can happen. Our bodies, when we're angry, our bodies, our physical posture, we want to defend ourselves. So that might be lashing out with our extremities and hitting or punching or screaming or yelling. But we want to use the defense mechanisms to protect ourselves. And oftentimes that can be very dangerous and detrimental.
So there's an interesting discussion here, because we started off talking about the hikoi and we're talking about social justice and social injustice. And a lot of people would say, well, anger is a very natural and justified response to an injustice, and maybe the anger can be used to power the movement. I don't know if that's actually what people are saying out there, and I'm sure that some people do think that. I guess we need to make clear that what you're talking about is if our physical health as human beings, and I'm talking about like a political strategy, so they're quite different things. But do you feel like you have anything to comment about that?
Sure. I mean, a political movement is a group of people trying to get another group of people to see their way, to understand what they're talking about. So what you've got going on is the perception of one group as opposed to the perception of the other. So in that setting, when you've had an angry discussion with another person in your life and it's just between two people and one person is angry with the other person, when anger is being directed in your direction towards you, what is your response? What do you want to do when someone is being angry towards you?
Well, it probably triggers fight or flight. So you either want to fight or flee.
Mm-hmm. So you're not at all thinking about listening to what the other person is saying, really. You're just like, how do I get out of here? How do I defend myself? Right.
Yeah.
So in a group, if your group is angry and you're the one speaking and sending out your voice and your anger and your frustration, do you think the other group is actually listening to what you're saying? in an intelligent way? Like, how can we help this person? Or do you think they're like standing their ground and you sit down and don't talk right now? What do you think their response is?
Yeah, it's not a constructive situation, is it?
No. So if your anger is based on the passion and the compassion that it's founded on, then that's going to be the first thing coming out of your mouth. And when we're speaking from a loving, compassionate space, that's a space of truth. Everyone feels that. And everyone has like you can almost have a very compatible space. Like everyone knows what love feels like. Mm. So if I'm coming to you and I'm saying, you know, I respect and love my ancestors. I'm really concerned for my family and the well-being of this, and this. And you're speaking from a loving space of what your concern is. They're actually feeling that because they have similar love for their family, their tribe, their Bana, their, you know, whatever space they're coming from. And so, Oh, this is the thing we have in common. Okay, we understand that your anger is based on love. So how can we manage this situation so that everyone can feel like they're being inclusive in the decision?
That doesn't feel like what I see going on out there at the moment.
Right. It's not generally whatever goes on in a political environment, because everybody's just angry and lashing out. Like, I mean, in the USA.
Oh, God.
Situation.
you brought that up.
There wasn't even like, here's what we're trying to accomplish.
No.
It was just like, you said this and she said that and he said that. And it was like, well, what do you even stand for? What, you know, why should I even vote for you? It wasn't ever about that. It was more about how can I make my opponent look terrible so that other people will vote for me?
Yeah. And our last general election, there weren't competing visions that people were voting for at all, more so than any other that I remember. It was just to stop the other one, really, was the vision, which is not a vision.
Right.
I sometimes wonder if there's any point, like, it's very hard to talk politics without people being triggered into basically a negative headspace. Like, is it even worth bothering if we can't do it except if we only get angry when we talk politics? Is there any point talking politics?
There's really not until you're willing to get into a space of understanding. And when you're willing to understand what the other person, or at least listen to understand rather than listen to talk, or then you're actually not listening. You're just trying to devise the next thing you're going to say. But when you're willing to listen to learn and understand what's going on, that's when you can actually accomplish something. So
it feels like a challenge.
It's definitely a challenge, which is why you need Sophrology.
because that's it. You've got to practice. Like what you've been saying is this: all this stuff takes practice, just like learning a sport or learning an instrument. And you can't just turn up at the next political debate and be calm because you want to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Political debate or personal thing that's going on in your personal life, you know, a conversation you want to have with a boss or with a child or your next door neighbor, you know, I mean, we really have to come at life from a space of loving kindness and figure out what to do. And so Sophrology, as with most of these type of strategies, we start with breathing. You always start with breathing because breathing helps you to pause and brain body connect. And you come into your body, you come into your mind, you come into the present situation, and you feel the physical sensation of the body, and then you can create effective intervention that way.
Yeah. Okay.
So it all starts with breath. This is probably, it's becoming a cliche, and people are getting tired of saying just breathe or being told to just breathe. But to be fair and truthful, that's always going to be the best line of defense. Your first line of defense is always going to be pause, breathe. Okay, what do I do next?
For you, that's probably quite easy. You are practiced at this. Mm-hmm. If you could probably do it quite quickly, I imagine.
I do it a lot, like all the time.
Yeah. So for inexperienced people who've got quite a strong emotion, just stopping and breathing might be a challenge. Are there other things they can do as well? Or should they run away? Run away from the situation so they can calm down.
You've got to get your brain into that space of what do I do next? I don't even know. Like, how do you, because you have to identify the physical sensation. So in sophrology, there are the thing that makes sophrology unique from most other or everything else is that we use three key techniques. And they happen at the beginning of every meditation.
Yeah.
And that's because we are training the brain. And so we are building neural pathways. We're fledging a new pathway in the forest of your mind, if you want to call it that. And so you identify the weight, temperature, and size of your body. So in a state of meditation, when you're identifying the weight, size, and temperature of your body, you're not identifying the image that you see in the mirror. You're actually sensing, the weight, what is the composition of my weight compared to the space around me? Like this chair that I'm sitting in, I'm grateful for the support of the chair that I'm sitting in.
Sorry, Lani. Okay? Yeah. Sorry. I just had someone come to the door and I thought, I would just put my microphone off and no one would hear me talking to him. But of course, you're on the different microphone, which I forgot. So you're like, what's he doing? He's not even listening to me. Sorry about that.
The weight, size, and temperature of your body, when we're talking about size, we're talking about the space you take up in the universe, like not just what you see in the mirror, but the outstretch of your arms, the energy field that's around you.
Yeah.
The temperature, when you identify the temperature of your body, you can also identify the temperature of the emotion that you're feeling. So as we're doing these things in a state of meditation, it helps us to access these things when we are not meditating because you've trained your brain to get into that place. So it really comes down to, I have a desire to regulate myself in all, whatever situation I'm in. Okay, how do I do that? Well, I actually have to implement a program of change in my life. I have to be willing to go through the process of change with my brain in order to easily access these tools.
Yeah.
So, and unless you're actually practicing it, the thing that I would say is it's always going to, their first line of defense is always going to be breath.
Yeah.
And then, that's where you start. So, and then we do all of the other things.
Yeah. So, it's a grounding process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Folks, we're talking to Lani Puriri, who is a sophrologist practicing here and in Hamilton. And I think you're in Hamilton right now, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Yeah. We're doing this over Zoom, so I never know where people are when I do an interview over Zoom.
Yeah, I'm in Hamilton, but I actually use Zoom. I have a few clients that I work with on Zoom. Some are in the States, some are here. So I go, I'll work with anybody anywhere.
Well, I'm like, I'll interview anyone anywhere too. So that works well. So yeah. Is there something you can direct people to if they want to follow this up? I know you've got a website and all that sort of thing. So
I do have a website. It's Sophro. So Sophro is spelled Sophro. Sophro Solace, Solace. Sophrosolace at sophrosolace.com is my website.
Yeah.
And there's some freebie strategies on there that you can have a look at. You can sign up to, get into my email list and things like that. So stuff's happening on the website. We're slowly building it.
I hear that from a few people I talk to.
It's a process.
Yeah, you got to get this website. You do it, and then you're like, you've done it, and then you look at it, you go, I'm going to, it needs an improvement. I'm going to do that soon too. And you do website 2.0 pretty almost straight away. I've noticed that happening to people as well.
Yep, that's true.
Yeah. All right, Lani. Well, look, thank you for talking to us this morning. That's good advice. A good thing. It's a good thoughts to have when you think about politics and you want to change the other side's point of view and it's just interesting to think about what it's doing to you. And I know that like for activists, there's this phrase, activist burnout is a big thing that people talk about in activist circles. And I tend to think now that burnout, based on my own experience, is a sign that you're just not quite living. You're not living your life the way you're supposed to live your life.
For sure.
Which I'm not saying is people's political views and that kind of stuff and their understanding of the world. I'm not saying that's wrong or right. I'm just saying what it does to our bodies.
Well, people don't realize it because they don't understand their bodies, and you don't. You know, that's the thing that I teach. My biggest program is called Power Up for Change, and it's a whole opportunity to build a relationship with your 11 body systems.
Yeah.
And when I say that to people, they're like, what are body systems? And I didn't know I had 11 of them.
Yeah. And that's something, that's a concept within sophrology, isn't it? That's something that you explain. And we have talked about that before in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, Lani. Well, look, thanks heaps for your time this morning, and good luck for the rest of the day. Hope it's nice in Hamilton.
All
right. It's a nice day out here too.